This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, are...
Suzanne Williamson and...
Liam Smart.
Well, today, we're going to take a little bit of a detour into the future and talk about Seven of Nine and her appearance in the new series, which just ended, the first season of which just ended, of Star Trek Picard.
There was a new series?
Yeah. Where have you been? You stuck in the 90s, Suzanne?
I guess so.
There is some Star Trek after Voyager. I'm just getting it out there.
Unheard of. There is only Voyager.
To me, it's still 2378.
Only if Endgame never happens.
One can dream. Nah, Endgame wasn't that bad.
So this is a little risky. We're still a Voyager podcast. We're not changing our format, but there's a strong connection between Voyager and Star Trek Picard in the person of Seven of Nine, the character of Seven of Nine. So we're going to talk about Seven of Nine and do a little compare and contrast of Seven in Voyager versus Seven in Star Trek Picard and try to bridge the gap, try to think about what accounts for the differences that we see between the Seven of Nine we know and love from Voyager and the person we're coming to know and love again in Picard.
Now, if it's not obvious, there are going to be spoilers. I'm just pointing it out there.
So don't get angry. Please.
Go watch Picard and then come back and listen to us.
Yes, definitely go watch because CBS All Access is free right now until sometime in May. So you have time to watch Picard and then you have time to watch Discovery and then go ahead and listen to... Shoot.
Are you talking about my podcast?
Yes.
It's called The Edge.
Thank you. My brain just went dead.
It's like, great, great job, Suzanne.
But yeah, if you haven't listened to The Edge, why not? Please listen to The Edge. It's freaking hilarious.
Well, I mean, half the time, I don't know how serious we're meant to be when we record. So I've got to edit one for Edge 89, and I don't know how much of it I can actually leave in.
Ooh, an X-rated Edge now.
With The Edge. Well, I mean, the name, definitely.
I've said for a long time that my other podcast, Metatrex, is my dinner, but To the Journey is my dessert.
Well, that's because To the Journey is a lot of fun, and Metatrex is...
Exactly. Is not. Thanks.
Is, no, I wasn't going to say that.
Metatrex makes my brain hurt.
Thanks, Leo. Yeah.
No, Metatrex is too... Is, I don't get it. I'm not smart enough for it.
Oh, sure you are. Stuff and nonsense.
No, I'm not saying it's boring. I have listened to a few episodes. It just, yeah, sometimes it just goes over my head a little bit. But that's because I'm, yeah, I don't get things. I'm trying to dig myself out of a hole. Help, Suzanne.
But you're a strapping young uni student. What are you talking about?
I didn't know. I do math, not philosophy. And even the logic math I don't like. So
I'm going to do a philosophy of meteorology episode just for you.
Oh, do it. Yes. Okay, I'll listen to that. I'm sorry.
So let's dive in. What do you guys think about Seven of Nine in Picard? It was like the worst kept secret ever. They put her in the trailer. So the big reveal of Seven of Nine coming on board the ship in Picard, we already knew it was going to happen. They showed the scene in the trailer. It was like, it was such an anticlimactic moment. It was so awesome to see, but it was totally anticlimactic.
Well, you knew it was going to happen from Comic-Con.
Yeah, ages ago, yeah. Part of me feels like Seven was put in to be like, hey, look, this is definitely in the correct, you know, universe. And it was, you know,
it's still Star Trek.
It's still Star Trek.
It's still Star Trek. Seven of Nine, is there?
You know, we've got a Voyager character, so everyone who's in Star Trek Voyager who likes that one, you should totally watch Picard because Seven's in it.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely got the Voyager fans on board with watching Picard. I mean, they would have been anyway, but I do think there are probably fans out there that were Voyager fans that never really watched The Next Generation, and maybe that's still true.
That's me, because TNG is the sixth of my list of seven live-action Star Trek.
Oh, wow.
And you've watched it since?
What, since Picard?
You've watched it by now, I mean.
Oh, TNG. Yeah, no, I've watched TNG.
Yeah, okay.
It's just sixth in the list of the seven in terms of what I like.
What's number seven?
TOS.
So would you, Liam, have watched Picard had Seven of Nine not been in that trailer?
Of course I would. I mean, it's new Star Trek.
Okay.
I mean, like, Seven of Nine's not the be-all and end-all, and I know I've had many a conversation.
What are you talking about?
What did I say? I can't remember what I said.
Seven's not the be-all and end-all.
Oh, okay.
I wonder if that was a primary factor. If that was, you know, that can't have been the only factor. Of course not. I mean, clearly if they're going to do a Borg story, bringing Seven of Nine makes sense.
It would have made sense bringing her back. I've had many a conversation offline with Suzanne and other people as well, that my biggest problem with Picard was bringing back a load of characters that didn't need to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the other camp completely. I don't mind the trip down memory lane, and I want to see as many of the old characters as possible. What they're up to nowadays, it doesn't bother me at all. I'm all about getting the band back together. I love it.
Well, they shoehorned in Troy and Riker, and that was pointless. So yeah, at least seven.
No, I love that episode.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
Nope. One of my least favorite.
Okay, two against one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, Seven of Nine had a little bit more to do, and it's good to see her. But was she shoehorned in a little bit? Possibly, but not as much as, you know, Riker and Troy.
Yeah.
Well, it's not totally clear why she needs to be there to drive the story forward. Maybe, at least in the first season, maybe that will change in the second season.
We'll see. But yeah, I don't know.
So tell me about all the feels you had when Seven of Nine was revealed. I mean, it was at least nostalgic, if not exciting.
I mean, of course it was exciting with Seven of Nine turning up, because she is probably my favorite character in all of Trek, as I've said beforehand, I think, onto the journey. I had some feels, but not a lot of feels. Suzanne had no feeling whatsoever by the sounds of things.
I'm used to that. I'm used to Suzanne having no feelings.
Okay. It's really cool to see Seven, but then I'm like thinking, well, what about everybody else? And then that gets me thinking about everybody else, and I don't want to see any other Voyager character show up on Picard.
Really? I agree.
Why not, Suzanne?
Because that'd be Voyager fan service then.
Yeah, it is Star Trek.
It's all fan service.
It's got characters on a new show. Focus on them. Don't bring all these randoms back just to be like,
give me more Raffi.
It's Tuvok.
Well, okay, in all fairness, you know, what they're doing with Seven of Nine, though, I mean, she doesn't seem to just be she's not shoehorned in. She's on the crew by the end of the series,
which,
right?
She takes her seat there. I don't think she should be on that crew. She should be hanging out with the XBs, helping them, and back to doing what she was doing.
All the XBs are dead, right? Or most of them?
No, they're probably still stuck on the Borg cube. They've just left.
Didn't they flush them all out the airlock collectively?
They were picking up the ship and reattaching things at the very end.
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's true.
Yeah, in that blah blah Latin episode.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of Seven of Nine as a character, though, like, I feel like she's more broken now that she's an adult and, you know, has gone through 4 years on Voyager, and then whatever's happened in the middle for her to end up in the Fenris Rangers, loss of Echeb. I just feel like she's more broken now than she was.
I wonder if that's because maybe everybody from Voyager is either dead or in jail.
Dead or in jail?
Dead or in jail.
Well, who's who? Is it the Maquis that are in jail and everyone else is dead? Or,
well, it could have been, you know, like, most of the people were on Mars when that happened. And then the other people were in jail.
Oh, maybe. I mean...
So you this is pretty morbid, Suzanne. You actually envision most of the Voyager crew as dead because they haven't shown up in Picard.
No, they just...
Way to think positively.
No, because she said, I have no family. I have no one.
Oh, yeah.
She did say that.
Well, I mean, unless she counted Echeb as, like, family.
Yeah, something drastic happened to the Voyager people.
That would explain the change, because there's a huge change between the Seven of Nine we see in Voyager and the Seven of Nine in Picard. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's been through something. They showed the death of Echeb, mm-hmm. which was, you know, somewhat moving.
Possibly all the innocent people that were picked up along the way, Echeb and Seven, and that's about it, because they left Neelix behind. Were
what a shame.
Sent off, and then other people were thrown in jail.
Okay.
Something drastic like that must have happened, because that's my big question. Like, okay, why does Seven feel like she has no family? What about her Voyager family?
Yeah.
Where are they? Why aren't they in her life? It could be she's self-isolating. For some reason, she just kind of fell out with everyone and has been hanging out in the former neutral zone for some reason or
another.
She's
looking for toilet paper.
Looking for toilet paper? Do the Borg need toilet paper?
Everyone needs toilet paper.
Can you imagine what a Borg toilet would look like?
It would be green.
Yeah. Well, probably.
Yeah, you remember when they had colored toilet paper?
No.
No.
No, I don't.
Borg toilet paper, green toilet paper, sure.
But I mean, Seven now is probably... even more pessimistic, or maybe not pessimistic, but I always found her to be very realistic in Voyager. And even now, she's probably even more so. You know, life is pretty crappy.
I think she's doing the only thing she knows how to do, which is to try to make order out of chaos, right? So she, for one reason or another that we don't understand fully yet, maybe there's just not enough information, we can speculate. Maybe it'll become clear in the second season. But she finds herself in a chaotic state with no family. She's lost her Voyager family for some reason. She finds herself in the former neutral zone, which is in chaos. So what does she do? She does what Seven of Nine does, which is try to make order out of chaos.
Now, I don't see it that way. I see it as her trying to help those in need, which she would have learned from Mama Janeway.
Mama Janeway.
Okay, yeah, I could see that too. And she mothered Echeb essentially. Mm-hmm. Now she's kind of mothering Elnor.
And that's total Janeway.
Yeah, Elnor is Echeb part two, apparently. So.
I just think she has a lot more baggage now that she's not a Borg. Which kind of leads me to the question, though, is being human and having that individuality worth all the trouble? Like, wouldn't it be better to be a Borg? You don't have to worry about anything.
She has her chance to be Borg again, right? She gets to play Borg Queen for a while, which was pretty fun and exciting. That was pretty cool.
I will admit that was cool.
That was cool, but when she
it's
was
fan service, but no, it was fun
when she was unhooked.
A tease, and that was it.
There were no holes in her clothes. That annoyed
point.
Me. It's like, what did it connect to? Was it magnetic?
Borg Queen transduction or something? I don't know.
That's a very like small nitpick, I guess. I don't know.
It just annoyed me. I'm like, wait a minute. No.
Yeah. Oh. But I do admit that it was pretty exciting to see Seven as the Borg Queen, even though, generally speaking, it was pointless because... she did nothing.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean about bringing certain characters back for certain nostalgia points and...
Hugh.
Nothing happening with them.
The problem is, with only 10 episodes, they don't carve out enough room to do anything else, right? They've got so much they're trying to squeeze into 10 episodes. How can it be anything other than, oop, you're in, oop, something happens, oop, you're out.
Then don't put them in.
Then don't do it.
I agree. They need to go one way or the other, have more episodes and dwell on these things longer and give everyone their due and slow down a little bit or strip out some stuff to make it more coherent.
Yeah, exactly.
So what kind of events could explain the difference? It was something tragic, but like, let's brainstorm. Do you have any, like, what could it have been?
Oh, you heard my thought.
Got Seven there.
Yeah. Well, your thought is that the Voyager crew screwed. It could be a yes. very, very messy breakup with Chakotay.
Oh, like that lasted long. No, that didn't last long enough to make any impact whatsoever.
Well, Seven is having a bit of an identity crisis in that regard, as we see in Picard.
I would definitely not call that an identity crisis.
Well, no, because sexuality itself is fluid. You don't have to define someone as heterosexual, homosexual. It's just they are who they are, and they love who they love.
There's arguably been at least a self-discovery process there.
There's a self-discovery process for everyone, though.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's probably just a little bit late to the game because, let's face it, she was assimilated as a six-year-old.
Now she had no adolescence, no teenage years, yeah. Nothing.
So when she's come out of humanity, she's sexually immature still, really. Yeah. Not like physically, but mentally. And she's got to go through that. And like she says in Someone to Watch Over Me, I think, mm-hmm. she says that there's no potential mates for her aboard that vessel.
Yeah. So these are like Seven of Nine, the college years, is what you're saying.
God.
No, we missed the college years.
We missed the college years.
That's what I'm saying. She's living it now, later in life.
No. She already knows who she is at this point.
I think she's just happy with what she's doing. I mean,
still, you can't put somebody's sexuality in a box.
No, because it is fluid. It can change over time. I mean, she could be not even bisexual. She could just be pansexual.
Yeah.
So, like, she's not at all interested in what the gender of the person that she loves is. She could just love a person. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how she'd love Chakotay because he's boring. But, you know, you had Axum, Rathi.
Not to Janeway, he's not.
Bajazel. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah, okay, Bajazel. Real quick, before I forget. What's with the name Bajazel? To me, all I hear is like shuffling around of the name Jezebel.
Oh no!
Is that a coincidence or is that?
I hear the Jazzle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what I hear, and I'm like, oh, dude, do people still do that? I don't think so.
No.
Wait, bedazzling?
No, the Jazzling.
Wait, what?
Okay, so here's me.
You might need to bring me up to speed on this.
I suggest not Googling it, but
don't Google it.
Well, yeah, that's the way to get me not to Google it.
So you can, the jazzling is putting like fake jewels and things.
I get it now.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, no, with her sexuality, it's, I don't agree with anyone that says, oh, so she's a lesbian now, or, oh, but she loved Axum, so she must be.
Oh, no, I'm not saying anything like
that. Oh, no, Zach, I'm not saying that you are. I'm not saying that you are, but there are a lot of people that aren't us three that are particularly saying that, so.
It was character development for Seven. We learned something new about her.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And you know what? Her and Rathi are, in my opinion, quite similar characters.
Yes.
Rathi is like a no-nonsense character, and we all know Seven is no-nonsense. So, and she is still no-nonsense in Picard.
Yeah.
As she is in Voyager. Talking about little things that she is the actual same in Picard that she is in Voyager is the little head thing that she does. Everyone's like, oh no, Data's head tilt in Soji, blah, blah, blah. Don't care about
what
that.
What head thing? Seven does a head thing?
Yeah, it's like a sort of
Just a little
turn and a little bit of a blink at the same time.
Oh, yeah, okay, sure.
She still has that.
I've never thought of it as a thing, but now that you mention
it. And she does it in the very first scene that we see her in Absolute Candor after she's beamed off of that wacky old Romulan, whatever it was, bird of prey or warbird. And she does it. She's like, you owe me a ship, Picard, and does a little head thing, and then she collapses. Or something, or it could be in Star Trek City, right? I don't remember, but she does it very well, and she just brings that straight back, which is kudos to Jeri Ryan playing a character, you know, 20 years later, still pretty much the same in terms of body language. I know some people have issues with Seven of Nine killing people.
That didn't bother me so much.
She kind of did that when she was Borg anyway.
She beamed off that Species 8472 in Prey.
Yeah.
She's like, nah, don't care. put them with the Hirogen, kill it. That's effectively sentencing that to death.
She felt bad about it afterward, though.
Oh, and she, what, killing 8472?
No.
The Jaeser and Orisa.
Yes.
I don't know that she felt bad about it.
Maybe not bad. That might be overstating.
She did show some remorse, I guess, that she's in the situation that she didn't want to be in again.
Yeah.
But there is so much that we don't know that's obviously happened between, you know, Endgame and Absolute Candor.
A lot.
Yeah, and for me, there's just some cognitive dissonance with seeing her hair all disheveled and not in her, you know, Borg cat suit, and just the different way she carries herself. You know, she talks more naturally, like she's picked up the idioms and the informal demeanors and the things normal people do that Seven of Nine never did in Voyager to any great extent.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty accurate to what happens in everyday life. Because, I mean, I spent the first 16 years of my life in the UK, and now I'm over here. You pick up the way Australian people talk. I mean, I'm not 100% with an Australian accent, but you pick things up. You pick up mannerisms. You pick up colloquialisms. And I guess in the 10-odd years or whatever that it's been since... Is it 10 years or 20 years since the end of Voyager in universe? 2378, 2399, yeah. So like 20 odd years, she would have picked up a lot of human behavior or other alien behavior and put that on, you know, herself. If that makes sense to what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's totally what happens.
And I mean, it is not tenable to wear that cat suit.
Oh no, I would have protested immediately if she showed up in the cat suit.
No, they wouldn't do that these days. Absolutely just, not.
No. You know that?
I mean, let's face it, they already had Bejazel in something like that.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't Seven of Nine have joined Starfleet? Why did she go this direction? Why is she an outcast?
This is what I don't know, because Seven of Nine is extraordinarily smart.
Maybe she didn't have that option.
Maybe.
Do you reckon she wouldn't have had that
maybe
option?
Maybe people are afraid of her as an XB. Maybe it's just a prejudice thing where, you know, no one's going to trust an XB in Starfleet.
Well, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, because let's face it, Janeway was very much an advocate for Seven.
Mm-hmm.
I think it wasn't Endgame pretty much because she died and she wanted to have Seven back.
Well, it's one of the reasons. I mean, there's two Vokas.
That's one of the reasons that she went back in time. Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it was one of the reasons, and we clearly know it's not Joe Carey.
Hey, you leave Joe alone.
You mean Janeway didn't go back in time to save Joe Carey? Wait, what?
Of course not.
Unacceptable.
If you think of it that way, like, Janeway would have been really wanting her to join Starfleet, and she's definitely got the ability to join Starfleet. Can you just imagine all of the stuff that she could provide Starfleet about the Borg?
Well, I guess this is my point. Like, if one of her driving motivations is to make order out of chaos, and Suzanne, you sounded like you disagreed with that a little bit, but I had assumed that one of the reasons she's being a Fenris Ranger is to make order out of the chaos that she sees in the former neutral zone. Isn't joining Starfleet a better way to make order out of chaos than whatever she's doing now?
I guess she also sees a weakness. So, I mean, the Fenris Rangers are to save the weak and the vulnerable around the neutral zone. And she sees herself as one of those people that were weak and vulnerable and potentially saved by Janeway.
And Starfleet has become a little cold-hearted in recent years, apparently.
Well, potentially, I mean, with the synth ban. That synth ban, we actually, just quickly going back to what you were saying about potential reasons for her to lose or to be a little bit more negative and jaded, I guess, potentially. We don't know if the synth band went on to include sentient holograms.
Yeah.
We see plenty of holograms in Picard.
But are they sentient?
Sentient.
Because the Doctor is sentient.
Why aren't they sentient? They seem sentient.
Are they, though? Because they are just copies of a particular person.
Well, you can't always tell, but what's the difference between like a genuinely sentient hologram and a kind of empty shell of a hologram that looks sentient but isn't really sentient? Like the ones you'd get in like Casino in the Royale in the Next Generation, those were, you know, hologram-like, but they presumably weren't sentient, right?
Index wasn't, in my opinion, sentient, and I don't really feel like the Rios holograms were, because they were just a copy of Rios themselves.
Yeah.
It's not like the Doctor has created their own thoughts and opinions and all sorts.
Music.
So, music, sexual activity. So, it could be that the Doctor is one of those people that...
That's the mark of sentience right there.
Sexually sentient. So, I mean, yeah, it could be that the Doctor's one of them. One of the reasons as well that she could have lost him because of that.
Yeah.
And that she's just like, I can't handle people being marginalized, and she wants to be able to help those who are being marginalized by stronger powers. You're both looking at me like, you don't know what I've said.
So exactly what I said, just like Janeway would do protecting the weak.
Yeah.
She doesn't come across as particularly noble in Picard, though. I mean, it sounds Seven of Nine like.
You don't think?
You know, there's...
I think it's noble.
There's a kind of purity of motivation there. The way Liam just described that sounded noble. I'm just not sure if I see that in the way she's portrayed in Picard.
That's how I saw it.
Is noble and loyal synonymous with each other? Because I've always seen her as a loyal character.
Depends on...
Because I don't understand what you mean by noble, sorry.
Like a knight fighting for what's right.
Purity of motivation.
So you don't think she's noble?
Is she fighting the good fight for its own sake, or is there some other motivation behind it?
You see, and that's where we don't know what's happened in the last 21 years.
Right, I mean, no. When I hear noble, I hear kind of like fighting the good fight out of some sort of purity of motivation, like no ulterior motives because it's the right thing to do.
Okay. Well, I guess that could just be a character change then since Voyager. I mean, I don't know. Again, like I said, we don't know what's happened in 21 years, so...
Well, all the characters in Picard have gone through something, right? Picard's hiding in his vineyard, and yeah, and Raffi's hanging out in the desert, and Seven of Nine's off being a ranger, and you know, they're all these, you know, individuals that are outcasts, maybe, or at least they're self-isolating.
That's very topical.
yeah, there's a 24th century pandemic. They're all self-isolating.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, really. I'm sorry.
No, none of us are sure. That's what's interesting. Yeah. There's something about it that doesn't add up yet. And maybe they'll explain it. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just take it for granted that Seven of Nine has gone through some stuff. And now she's on, you know, she's gone through a few episodes of Picard. And now she's on the crew and they're off to season two and whatever they're going to do.
Well, let's face
it. Maybe they'll never explain it.
Well, next season, they're going to have more people to introduce because Guinan is coming back. And who knows who else is coming back?
I think I saw, the Doctor. I think I saw an interview, an article or something that said Bob Picardo was in talks to come back and play the Doctor in Picard.
I mean, let's face
it. Which does not excite Suzanne, I can tell.
No, we're just not going to get much backstory. So the questions we have, they're not going to be answered.
They didn't explain a hell of a lot of things in an Arcadia Ego, whatever it was called, part two. There was a lot of
blah,
holes
blah,
in
blah,
that.
Blah, blah, Latin episode, yeah.
Yeah, the blah, blah, blah Latin episode. Yeah, they didn't explain a lot of what happened in...
Which literally means, and I am in Arcadia.
It does.
Okay. So.
Always bring your resident Latin expert. Nothing. Okay, just that's what it means.
So, I mean, they probably won't explain anything because that's what Picard's been about, not explaining everything.
One of the strongest connections they make between the characters is the fact that we have several XBs that we all care about. Picard is an XB in some sense. Hugh, everyone knows and loves from The Next Generation. Seven of Nine, XB. All the other XBs that we've, you know, come to be sympathetic about because we saw them being deborged and eventually killed in some cases and saw the effects on Hugh. There's some sort of shared experience that Picard and Seven of Nine and Hugh all have, and we get to see a little bit of the lived experience of the way in which this trauma of having been aboard persists for decades.
Okay.
They do have a lot of shared backstory. I still think the addition of Hugh and Picard was pointless.
It was, because just to kill him? Really? Why?
In terms of Seven of Nine and Picard, though, they have a lot of shared stuff, and they've been severely affected by the Borg. I mean, Seven of Nine, incredibly so. And yes. I forgot where you were going with that, Zach.
I'm not sure I was going anywhere in particular with it, other than that it's interesting that even after so many years, there's still... Neither one of them, they say explicitly in the episode, neither Picard nor Seven feels like they've completely recaptured their humanity, even after, you know, 20 some odd years in the case of Seven and however many years it's been for Picard, 30 years.
Well, I mean, I thought that was a beautiful little scene in Picard, but at the same time, Picard was only assimilated for, like a week, if that. But it depends on how much humanity you lose, I suppose.
Yeah.
Whereas Seven of Nine,
it was enough to scar him for 30 years.
I suppose so. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, there is a lot of shared experiences there, and I feel like we just
are there any takeaways? Like, what are we supposed to take away from this? Is it just like, hey, everyone's gone through stuff and it's dramatic, and
pretty much
is that the only takeaway? Is there something else we're supposed to get from that I'm not getting?
You're the philosophy guy.
Well, I think for all of them, okay, if we want to go there a little bit, this isn't Metatrex, but we can go there a little bit. I think for each one of the characters, they've got a choice to make. They can either live in the past, whatever traumatic event has happened to them, they can hide in their desert or on their vineyard or being a ranger or whatever. Rios on his ship smoking cigars.
Trying to hide from their reality.
Holograms of himself and pulling shrapnel out of his shoulder. They can do that, or they can get over it and go do something else with their life, something productive. And so much of life is like that. You either look backward or you look forward. Yeah. And all of these characters have to have this fundamental moment of decision where they decide to look forward no matter what's happened to them.
So are you telling people with depression to just snap out of it, because that's how it's coming across?
Yes, I think that is it.
No.
No, I really, I think this is one of the takeaways, that there is this interesting tension in life between accepting the facticity of what's happened to you and all of its effects, but still transcending it and looking forward.
You can't get over depression in a snap, in an instant.
I didn't say that so much. I think what I meant was that.
Are you saying, though, and let me just make sure I'm trying to, hold on, let me just try and get what you're trying to say right. You're trying to say that there comes a point in time that you, and you're saying that these characters aren't getting over it straight away, but there comes a point that there is a decision that needs to be made, or that they, a decision that they face, and they're not consciously deciding what decision they make, but they end up coming out of their depression.
No, I think it's more conscious than that. I think all of them at some point have to make a conscious decision to continue to hide from life like they've been doing, or step out into the unknown with all of their trauma, with all the effects of whatever they've gone through, but still moving forward in life. And that's a conscious decision. Okay. I don't think that's
what you're saying
is
they're not getting over the depression. To some extent.
I mean, we don't know. Maybe if it's easier for some of them than others. Who knows,
get
right?
Over depression. You will never get over it. But what you're saying there is that you're just moving on and that's it. I don't at all agree with you there.
Well, you can let it. I think you can make a decision to let it define you, or accept it and transcend it and move forward.
That's not how depression works.
Some of the things are true about it
at all.
But that's what we're seeing in Star Trek, though. And that's the way Picard is depicting it.
I disagree wholeheartedly. I think you can make the decision to try and move on, but it will be with you forever. Is that sort of what you think, Suzanne, or not? It's very difficult, because I can only say that I've only gone through that stage of life when I was probably about 12, and I can't say that it was a severe bout. So I'm sort of talking from what I understand from other people.
Mm-hmm. I guess I don't think it's clear at all, and it's probably different from person to person to person and situation to situation to situation. I don't think it's obvious that any given experience from the past falls into one category or the other. One category being things that are just you accept and they're part of your facticity and things you can't move beyond, or things that you can transcend consciously or subconsciously, short-term, long-term, whatever. I don't think it's totally clear what falls in what category or the other. It's going to vary from person to person.
Okay, if we take out the term depression from it, I can see what you mean.
Yeah, I don't mean clinical depression, I think.
Okay. I think we need to move past this.
I mean some sort of existential depression.
Probably more of an existential crisis than, as opposed to depression. I don't know. I feel like we should move on past
Rios
this.
he's in full-on existential crisis, right? I mean, he's reading existentialist law. They're driving the point home that he's having an existential crisis, right?
Yeah.
Raffi calls him broody existential, and he's reading existentialist philosophers.
Yeah.
Listening to, you know, existentialist music and smoking cigars.
I feel like you need to cover that on Metatrex. So...
Just wait. It's coming out next week.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Can we talk a little bit about Acheb?
Yes.
And Seven's relationship with Acheb? I was beyond excited that Acheb was on screen. Not because I want random characters. coming back and being like, oh, hey, look, it's a character from, you know, three episodes, blah, blah, blah. But because we weren't expecting it and he was used as an absolute decent plot device to move on someone. Now, yeah, it was sad Ichab is dead, and I was driving around and went to the hardware store afterwards because, I mean, look at me, I'm such a hardware expert. But anyway, I went there.
What did you buy?
And, huh?
What did you buy?
A shower rail.
A shower rail? Because you're 80 and you're worried about falling over in the shower?
No, no, no. To put a shower curtain.
To hang the curtain from.
To hang the curtain from. Yeah, because my glass doors.
I thought you meant like one of the handrails, like, you know, like.
No.
Don't fall over in the shower.
Okay. No, the glass door, like the wheels on the glass doors that like move backwards and forwards were just screwed. So I'm like, screw it, I'll just buy a shower rail. So anyway. So, I mean, I was very sad that Ichab was dead, but at the same time, it made a perfect, perfect plot device. And it that's did. How they should use recurring characters. Not how they used Troy and Riker.
I actually had the exact opposite intuition. That's so interesting because I feel like Ichab was completely tacked in. Like they were trying to use Ichab as Seven's gone through stuff and we're going to show you one little thing she's gone through, however important Ichab was to her. To me, that was inadequate to account for the change she's gone through. And I think they were trying to use that to carry the weight of the difference.
That was part of what she's gone through.
I mean, that could probably be one of the biggest things that she has gone through because Ichab effectively became like a son to her. And especially after Ichab giving her his cortical node.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they have a thing for eyes being pulled out in
I've got no issue with that.
Picard.
Have you heard? Have you seen what I wanted to do on VSS Liver?
Yeah. I guess what I was trying to say, though, is I have the exact opposite intuition. I felt like Ichab was completely tacked in, okay. And Riker and Troy didn't feel tacked into me. That felt much, much more natural.
Oh, gosh, they did. It could have been anybody on that planet.
Yeah.
They were not needed to drive the
plot. I see
what
you mean, Zach. In terms of Ichab, though, I just wanted to say, and I think I mentioned it in the postcards thread, just how tragic he is. Like, his whole reason for being in existence was that he was engineered to destroy the Borg.
Yeah.
And then he was killed for being a Borg. So his whole life is just trying to be destroyed, especially from what we saw in Child's Play. And then at the same time, with Seven of Nine, she's losing Ichab, which is probably her closest child, if you look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But she's already lost one in Voyager's episode. I think it was called One or Drone. I can't remember which one. And she lost the other Borg kids. And then she lost the Borg baby because, you know, that was forgotten about. She probably doesn't even care about that Borg baby. But anyway, so.
No one cared about that Borg baby.
Borg baby? Who cares? So.
That was a pretty deep Voyager callback, though, that Ichab is missing his cortical node.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I appreciated that. And they're the kind of things that we need in Picard, and hopefully we get less of it in Discovery just because of the time difference. But those little things that we've called back to Voyager, that cortical node lost is deep cut. Like Jordan, my partner, was like, huh? Why is that relevant? And I'm like, it's in this episode. And
for those of us who know the character, we were like, oh yeah, that's right. He gave up his cortical node to save Seven's life. And all the feelings.
And then
right.
And Seven of Nine couldn't.
Which fell flat for me because I thought it was tacked in. But
okay. Yeah, see, that didn't feel flat for me at all. Because then Seven of Nine.
Interesting.
And yeah, I mean, what did fall flat for me was Picard's death. That was boring.
Yeah.
But the fact that we had Ichab, and that showed probably one of the biggest moments in the 21 years. That she's, you know, been gallivanting around and why she became so like she is, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like some of the Voyager callbacks were a little too subtle, like even the Voyager theme playing a little bit when Seven of Nine made her appearance and made her exit. I almost didn't notice it. It was almost too subtle.
Oh, I heard it straight away.
Oh, I didn't. I know the Voyager theme backward and forward. And I'm gonna
learn
it on
not.
Guitar and play it on the podcast sometime. And yeah, I just missed it. Like, oh, really? I missed it.
Oh, can you let me know what podcast you're going to do that on? Because I think I'm going to be busy.
Oh, no. Yeah, you'll be captive audience.
You can play the dun-dun-dun on like a bongo or something.
Okay, Liam, you bring your bass. You'll do that. And Suzanne, what are you going to play?
A kazoo.
That's right. I think we said that last week, actually, didn't we?
Oh, we're going to do it. It's on the calendar. I'm going
to
do it.
All right, I'll try and learn some form of keyboard sound to go on it. Well, what were we saying? Oh, and the other little one, which I thought was cool, was the Sicarians.
Yes, that was awesome.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed that. You know, I love that episode. So.
Yeah. And...
Oh, did you notice them playing Kalto at the end?
Yes.
Yeah.
Seven and Raffi playing Kalto?
As soon as I saw that, I yelled out, Kalto!
I actually didn't see it until the second time round.
Mm-hmm.
And those little references are the cool little things. It's kind of like how Commodore O had a sort of smaller version of the Kishara on her desk. Like, I thought that was pretty cool. And just those little references are the things that I want. I don't want something shoved in your face.
Yeah. Oh, see, and I guess I think of some of those things as kind of shoved in your face. Like, oh, there's a Kalto game there. That feels like fan service to me as much as anything else that we've talked about is fan service.
No, it would have been fan service if it was Kata Scott.
Would have been a little too on the nose.
But Kata Scott was mentioned in Discovery, though.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was.
So, I mean, we're clearly very different with what we want from Voyager in the new shows. Because it's bound to be Voyager references in Discovery and DS9 references in Discovery as well. So,
it shows the diversity of what we love about the show we love. You know, we're all Voyager fans, but we seem to gravitate towards different aspects of it.
And I've realized what I don't like about having Hugh and Riker and Troy in Picard. And that is, in my opinion... And even actually having Jean-Luc Picard in it, to be quite frank, because I thought he was one of the weakest characters. And Data didn't want that, didn't want the Soon character. To me, it took away from the performances of Michelle Hurd, Santiago Cabrera, Alison Peel, Evan Evagora. He was really upsetting for me that he didn't have much happening for that character. Harry Treadaway and Peyton List.
And I guess I see it a little bit differently. I see that as an intentional choice that Patrick Stewart made in the way he's portraying Picard now, to take this character that has a legacy and strip out all of the things that go with that legacy and see what's left over of, you know, Jean-Luc Picard, the person. When you take away all the stuff and all the character traits, all the attributes that make up that legacy, I feel like that's completely intentional.
Mm. See, to me, it just made him not look like a godlike character, which is great. And then they basically made him into... a synth, which can easily be made immortal in the end anyway, like a god. Mm-hmm. So, meh. It's really funny how we've got a very, very different opinion of it. Hey, quite like that.
Suzanne, I think we know the answer to this question from you. I was going to ask, who else from Voyager do we want to see on Picard? And I think the answer for you is no one.
No one. You can mention people. You can have pictures of people in the background.
Just don't, I agree. Don't bring anyone else on.
Yes, a picture of Janeway and Chakotay's wedding on somebody's wall is fine with me. But actually bringing them on? No. No, thanks.
The only character characters, in my opinion, that deserve to be on a show and come on would be Admiral Janeway, because she was the pinnacle of Voyager. Like, she was the main character, and she was the reason the whole Borg... transwarp hub was destroyed, etc. There is a logical reason to bring her back. And the same to me would apply if Benjamin Sisko was on Picard, because he was the main character of Deep Space Nine. They're the only two characters that I would want to come back purely because of their significance to the shows that they were in. I don't want someone like Tuvok showing up. The Doctor isn't required. If bloody Tom Paris...
Let me throw another idea out there. Hold on.
If Tom Paris shows up, like, what the hell? That would be stupid.
May as well bring Harry then.
Ugh.
How about this? Let me throw a third option out there. How about Naomi Wildman?
No, thanks.
I could see it.
It'll just be stupid small universe syndrome then, though. I mean, yeah, Scarlet...
It would help drive Seven of Nine's character forward in the same way that her connection...
No, because possibly Naomi is dead. Therefore, Seven is saying she has no family.
That's right. Everyone's dead. There are no options.
Everybody's dead.
If Seven of Nine mentioned Naomi Wildman, that'd be fine. I feel like mentions are the only things that we should have.
Yeah.
On the flip side of things, when, for example, Mr. Vup said about Mr. Quark being so happy with you, I didn't like that because literally a few scenes earlier we saw a thingy of Quark's bar.
Mm-hmm.
Small universe syndrome. And that's what I don't want. So in answer to your question, I don't really want anyone, but if we have to have someone, it has to be Admiral Janeway. And even then, for only a very, very, very minor cameo. Not, let's go make pizza on a planet. Because she can't cook.
I really fundamentally don't mind the show morphing into a, not a nostalgia show, but I really, you know, I don't mind Small Universe Syndrome. These are the characters we love.
If it turns into a nostalgia show, it's not going to allow new people to watch it. Because I've got friends that have not watched anything other than Discovery and the Kelvin Timeline movies. And they like Star Trek for that, but they won't watch the previous series because it's too old. And it's not modern television. Zach, what ones would you enjoy? Let me guess. You want basically the whole crew. You want to see like a Voyager gets home. No. You want to see a Voyager gets home anniversary party, don't you? A whole episode on that.
I would like to see that. But I wouldn't mind a Voyager sequel show, but I don't think that's Picard. But I of course I wouldn't mind seeing the characters again, but I'm trying to think who would make sense for the show. I think Naomi Wildman would make sense. I think Janeway would make sense a bit because of the connection between Seven and Janeway and the Borg connection. I agree with that. I could actually see, you know, if transwarp is a thing now again in Star Trek, like,
don't,
you know,
fourth
warp 9.9. I was going to say Neelix. I could see bringing Neelix back from the Delta Quadrant. Oh, I could see it.
No, thank you. We do not need that hairball. No hairballs on Picard.
you guys said like you aren't fans of Voyager at all, really. Why? What's the danger?
He needs to stay on Voyager.
Yeah.
I like Neelix on Voyager. I don't want him in another show.
Exactly.
I'd like to see how his wardrobe evolved in 20 years.
Oh my god. That actually, do you know what? That would be interesting. 25th century Neelix. But yeah. Sorry, I feel like I'm being very argumentative today.
That's me every day.
Well, let me try to clarify. Like, what exactly are you worried about? Are you worried about it ruining Picard and not making sense? Are you worried about it ruining the characters that we love? Are you, what is the fear?
I want a show to stand on its own with its own characters. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing.
Exactly.
We can be in a universe and be in the same universe because you can have little mentions, like having little Quark's bar in Free Cloud.
Which was fun.
You can have mentions like the Sicarians having been assimilated and them having a spatial trajector. But you can't have a whole episode getting pizza with the Troy Rikers, you know? Magically, Hugh is on a Borg cube that is the focal Borg cube of a season. That doesn't work. You can't have Tom Paris showing up and be like, I'm going to be your pilot because I'm a great pilot. Yeah, he's a great pilot, but he is not the only pilot in Picard, you know?
Maybe the reason that I have such different intuitions is that I'm fundamentally not a plot-driven fiction fan. I don't really care about the plot too much. I care about the characters and the ideas. I don't care about the plot. The plot's boring. Picard.
Yeah, to me, plot is better. That's why I didn't like Picard as much in the end, because they had a great plot and they ruined it and it went too slowly.
Exactly.
And I liked some of the character stuff they were doing, and I feel like they needed to do more of that and ditch some of the stupid plot stuff they were doing.
There was barely any plot at the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, and the last 15 minutes was just, yeah, damn, we're not the lions, so we shouldn't be picking it apart.
It was just rehashing a death that had already happened.
I do wish they would come up with a slightly more sophisticated plot than here comes another thing to destroy the galaxy or destroy Earth fill in the blank.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I'm done with those kinds of stories.
I agree with that. But a show needs to stand on its own, and plonking so many characters in is annoying.
The other end of the spectrum. So there's a spectrum, right? But a show is totally standing on its own, Picard. They could do just mere cameos, you know, little appearances like Riker and Troy and Data and whatnot.
That was 10% of the season.
Slightly further along the spectrum would be incorporating a regular character like Seven of Nine. So they've already gone there. And it seems like Seven of Nine is coming back from what we can tell from the end of season one. At the other end of the spectrum would be, why, if you really want to bring these characters back, just do a sequel show. Get the band back together and do Voyager Part 2. Mm. I would love that.
Who's going to pay for that?
I would.
We don't need a Voyager Part 2.
They can count on $6 a month from me.
Yeah. So if you were to place me
No, you wouldn't be interested in that?
No.
There's no way you're going to get all the actors back for that.
No.
Why not?
Because a lot of them have gone on to directing. They're not acting anymore.
Well, I mean, that's the same with Riker and Frakes, Jonathan Frakes. Like, he's mostly a director now, but he's obviously come back. And you can probably say all of those characters and actors, or the majority, will come back to do it because, hey, money for not much extra work, really, in terms of having to build a character. They've already got a character. But, I don't know, I don't want it. We've had Voyager. We've had TNG. Picard isn't TNG, but it's becoming that.
One of the fundamental principles of all of Star Trek, I think, in any series, in most of the episodes within the series, I think, is that the adventure continues. There is no point at which the adventure is done. The human adventure, the literal adventure on screen, there's always the next chapter. There's always a reason to get back on the bridge of that ship and go into the future.
Okay.
And I like those moments. Like, I'm thinking of moments like the end of Nemesis, when they're putting the ship back together. There's no scene, but you know they're putting the ship back together and the adventure goes on. Like, at the end of Star Trek, is it 4 or 3? I forget which movie it was now. They say, and the adventure continues at the end of the movie.
Okay, you mentioned Nemesis. You mentioned Nemesis. Data died. Why do we have to see Data dying again in Picard?
I think it's an interesting examination on whether an immortal life is worth living. You know, Picard basically says, I don't want to be immortal. And Data says, I don't want to live forever. And a butterfly that lives forever is not a real butterfly. I think all that's really interesting meaning of life stuff. And you could argue, and same thing with Rios's character, for that matter, the fact that he's so concerned with, you know, this existentialist philosopher that he's so obsessed with reading, who's obsessed with death defining our lives. You could say, well, yeah, the finitude of our life is what gives us motivation to do anything in the first place. So who would want to live an immortal life? There'd be no reason to do anything. So I think that's interesting from my point of view.
No, thanks.
But I'm coming at it from, you know, the Metatrex philosophy standpoint. So,
yeah.
So those things don't fall flat for me. I think those are deep and meaningful and the things I want them to dwell even more on.
Yeah. See, I'm either looking at it, and I've been accused of looking at it in too simplistic a view before. And to me, I watch TV for a story and a plot that has characters in it. Those characters are what make the show and what make the story. So as you say, we do need character development. But if you then create a story that gets finished in about 20 minutes and then have something from a story that happened either 20 years ago, which isn't relevant really to me, the storyline that's been portrayed in an episode, I don't want to see it. I'm not doubting at all that data scene was beautiful, but they should have built that into the story much better. They should have given, you know, some extra dream sequences with Data to show just how much Picard was thinking about Data throughout these 10 episodes. And then that scene would have made sense. And whilst I'm not intelligent enough to, or maybe not intelligent, but I'm not of that way of thinking that I can comment on what you mean about whether mortality or immortality is something that you want to live. Like, I'm sorry, answer that one.
One thing is for certain, Liam, death will find you too.
It will.
It will matter.
I suppose, yeah.
Well, it's been fun debating and sometimes disagreeing with you guys about the role of Seven of Nine in Star Trek Picard and going forward. But this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I like the character, but I would have rather seen Noonien.
Okay, interesting.
Tiebreaker to Clerk Zalagi. That's your new nickname, is Tiebreaker.
Yeah, Chrissy, what do you think, since Brandon and I think exactly the opposite?
Yeah, that's all right. That's why you got to have three people. It works better.
Earl Grey.
No, I think the hat's going to get bigger, but also double as her spacecraft. It'll unfold, it'll envelop her, and she'll be able to just walk out an airlock and zoom off.
Her personal transporter.
Oh, there it comes. Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I like it, Amy.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
For a logic extremist suicide bomber to be shown on screen in Star Trek, blowing up a ship with a high-profile ambassador on it in Sarek, it is doing exactly what Star Trek usually does. Mm. in terms of bringing something from the real world straight back into the show. And I thought that that was one of the most stark examples of that in season one with Vlatak.
Yeah.
The Ready Room.
This story, Una's book, which is excellent, and the upcoming third season of Discovery, from what we've seen so far, are all at their core commentaries on our present day. They're commentaries on Brexit, they're commentaries on the Trump administration, they're commentaries on the sort of the way that countries and governments around the world are turning their back on globalization and they're becoming insular. And, you know, science fiction has always been about social commentary, and Star Trek has been about social commentary. And so what we're seeing is modern day commentary on the current climate of the world. And that's the reason that these stories are taking the form that they're taking, as far as I see it.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop podcast app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. It helps us jump up in the charts and find more listeners. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
Yeah, now we do have a new review from the US Apple iTunes store, whatever it's called now, the Apple Podcasts app, that'll do, from an SJ Sharks fan 39. I have no idea what SJ Sharks is. I'm assuming that's some kind of sports.
It's a hockey team.
It's San Jose
Sharks.
Oh, okay. Well, I have no idea if they're good, but yay. And it says, thank you for more shows. Last year, the show went on what felt like an extended hiatus. I think they only did 6 shows the entire year, and I was confused why they cut back. Well, in 2020, it feels like the show got rejuvenated, and I think Liam being there is helping. It's not just me. Okay, I'm just...
I am very forceful.
Of course it is. We were out of topics, man.
I'm very forceful with these guys, but there were other reasons that you went on hiatus. So, I also love the new series they started where they rewrite each season of the show featuring a prominent alien from the season. They've only done season one, but I'm looking forward to seeing how this series develops. In Voyager's 25th anniversary, it feels like TTJ has come back with a vengeance. Keep up the great work, all. So yeah, thanks for that. I haven't worked out what Alien will do for season two yet, but it could be interesting. In terms of the hiatus, it's part of the reason why I was like, guys, I want more TTJ shows, so I'm going to make them with you.
The Sicarians? What are you talking about?
Oh, we could. We could do the Sicarians and how they got assimilated. Oh, but then there was season one.
Yeah, they were season one.
Yeah, we could see.
That's okay.
We'll make that up as we go. No,
there's too many good stuff, too much good stuff in season two.
Okay.
I have ideas.
Maybe that could be next week's episode.
I smell the wood burning, Suzanne.
But yeah, thank you for that review, guys. Thank you for that review. Keep them coming because, yeah, it does help us jump up the charts and find new listeners that we may have lost in the hiatus. So, yeah.
Yes. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it'll come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact, choose Message to a Trek.fm show, and select To the Journey. You can also find the network on Twitter, at Trek.fm, and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Liam, when you're not sitting down to play a game of Coruscant, where can our listeners find you on the internet and around the network?
You can find me on the internet, on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me on the Babel Conference, and you can find me on The Edge, our network's discovery podcast with Brandy and Nick. So, Zach, when you're not desperately jumping on the nostalgia train in Star Trek Picard, where can we find you on the internet and around the network?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrex, Trek FM show about Star Trek and philosophy, speaking of existentialist characters like Rios. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me in there, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Frueling. And how about you, Suzanne? When you're not busy tracking down Icheb's missing cortical node, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around Trek.fm?
Well, you can find me on the net, on Twitter. My handle is KJaneway8. You can also find me popping up every now and again in the Babel Conference.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. If you don't know how to spell Patreon, that is patreon.com/trekfm. To get all the details, you could gain a producer credit for To The Journey or another of our Trek FM shows and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
There are some people we would like to thank, the first being C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, who we just found out is going to have a cameo in Season 2 of Picard. Executive producers Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, and Richard Marquez, our production manager. Special thank you to our associate producers Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you for your continued support of Trek FM and To The Journey.
That is one heck of a way to start a rumor, Suzanne.
That's what
I do. Did you hear that Chris is going to be in make a cameo in Season 2 of Picard?
That's what I do.
No, where'd you hear that? To The Journey. Must be true. Well, be sure to join us next time, and we'll be taking turns being the Borg Queen. But until then, this has been To The Journey.
I make the best queen. But I do want to put a spoiler notice in, just because.
Okay, you can do that. You're nicer than I am. I'm like, spoiler notice, you know, can't they tell what we're going to be talking about from the moment we say what we're going to be talking about? Why do we need to put a spoiler notice in? You know, they don't want spoilers. Why are they listening to a episode about Picard, right? So.
Because it's not about Picard.
It's about Seven of Nine.
Tertiary adjunctive unimatrix 01. Imagine if you had to sign that on a signature.
Having to sign what?
7 of 9, tertiary adjunctive unimatrix 01.
Well, that's if she kept her full name, you know.
I wonder what the second adjunct does. Secondary adjunct.
Hmm. Or the primary adjunct.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, somewhere, you know, ranking behind 7 is the quadrant.
Well, I'm guessing that will be the quaternary, I think it is.
Quaternary? Yeah, what's the right term there?
That'll be that episode.
Who is her equal in Unimatrix 02? That's what I want to know.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Teleconference of all the tertiary adjuncts of the Unimatrices.
A Borg Zoom meeting.
A Borg Zoom meeting. Yeah, that's the Borg have to go remote now.
Oh, it's a shame that's not in the podcast.
It can be at the end.
It can be your title.
They can't assimilate in person anymore. They got to do it remotely. Fire and Ice by Robert Frost. Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction ice is also great and would suffice.